We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show. We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio. I'm Patricia Karpus. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who share how meditation and mindfulness practices change our lives. Our podcast is brought to you by Meditation Studio, Apple's pick as one of the 10 best apps of the year. Why download the app? Because life is messy. We get stressed, anxious, have trouble sleeping, we work too hard, we deal with conflict, our hearts get broken, we worry about the state of the world. We meditate because we're human. Our app gives you hundreds of meditations from over 30 leading experts. It helps a lot. And if you haven't tried the app yet, you can now try it for free and explore a starter series plus a sample of some of our favorite guided meditations in the Discover collection. You may also want to check out our new meditation collections this year. Mindful eating, work, authentic leadership, and a special collection just for college students. There's also a new mindful work and sleep basics course. If you've already got the app, check out our new unguided meditation timer where you can create your own meditations with or without our brand new, pretty amazing music tracks. And don't forget the 8 free meditations on Alexa. Just ask her to enable Meditation Studio. Today's guest is Saul Halpern, investment advisor, writer, and consultant. Saul is the president of Highlander, a mindful finance company located in Boulder, Colorado. He has over 20 years of experience in financial markets and brings more than 30 years of mindful meditation practice to his professional and personal life. He works with his clients to help them understand the causes of money stress and conflict, and helps them define and meet their financial goals. His focus is on helping you align your goals with your values so that you can get super clear on what matters most in your life. And he does this with couples and families too, so that you can all be in sync. I love how he talks about how your attitudes and emotions about money can be a place of self-discovery. You'll also hear his top 5 tips for getting in touch with your money self, which you'll learn ends up being pretty darn important. Money is such a huge part of our lives and something most of us often avoid talking about. Getting in touch with this can be super transformative. Now, here's Saul. Saul, it is so great to have you on Untangle today. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Patricia. Thank you for having me.
We've talked about so many different things on this show, from relationships to forgiveness to just a simple meditation practice and sleep, but we have never talked about money and our relationship to money and how we can maybe improve or think about that differently. So I want to start by helping people understand what you do and what mindful finance means.
It's funny that you started things out by saying that you've never had this conversation about money before here, because I find that's actually really common with people who are very awake and aware to their own lives and want to live fulfilling and meaningful lives and have been pursuing all kinds of practices around that and lifestyle changes and things like that. But a lot of times money is sort of off topic, off taboo, even more than sex. So it's just one of those areas that are interest aspects of this area that make it so fascinating to me. So on the mindful finance side of things, the top level view is that our relationship to money and finance related decisions can be a source of well-being and self-discovery. So really in line with all of the things that I imagine your listeners are engaging in their lives already, but bringing this part into that path of life and well-being. And within the mindful finance context, I like to talk about it and generally around, you can kind of look at it at two levels. One is the individual level and the other is sort of the societal level. For this interview, we'll look a little more on the individual side. In a nutshell, the kind of individual level of this mindful finance idea for your money life to be a potential place for well-being and self-discovery starts with developing skills around pragmatism and a sense of humor and worthiness. So working with those kinds of ideas. And then ultimately those lead to confidence, cheerfulness, and generosity. So that's the basic piece there. And behind all that actually is the motivation to lower suffering too. Just recognizing that life is painful sometimes or in general has a lot of suffering in it. And if we can lower that, that's good.
It sort of makes me laugh that you say people don't like to talk about money as much as they don't like to talk about sex. There's a NPR podcast called Sex, Death, and Money. I'm not sure what order they go in, but the three things that we don't like to talk about that much. But I like that you gave us this big overview or uber view of mindful finance. Talk to us about some of the questions that you might ask people to get more in touch with their feelings about money. And what does it mean to really be mindful about money? I mean, on the one hand, you help people invest, but on the other, you help people get in touch with themselves and help them go through this self-discovery process. How do you get us to that place?
Yeah, the choice around investing, or funny you bring up death too, that tends to be a big part of financial advising life as well, because the sort of planning side of things and insurance and things come up a lot. So my job kind of covers two of the three there. It's really a matter of trying to look at habitual patterns that we may have in this area of our life that are not serving us anymore and why they arose. And typically habitual patterns arise for a reason, like kind of a good reason even maybe. They're serving some kind of purpose for you. One of those, for instance, might be like avoiding thinking about money. And the kind of good, I guess you could say, reason that we might develop that kind of habitual pattern is that it protects our sense of cheerfulness and well-being, and like it's a scary kind of topic. And so the habit can be to change the subject or something like that and begin to unpack what those things are. So some of the questions you might look at are just things like, what worries you or what are you concerned about? If a person's come to the point where they're having a conversation with me about mindful finance, there's probably a reason they're sitting there with me. So oftentimes, creating the environment there where they feel comfortable to explore some of these things in a non-judgmental way or space is really the key. So creating a place where they feel safe enough in a sense to talk about, okay, why am I sitting down with someone to talk about money? It's because I have probably fears and things in that area, and I've developed habitual patterns to deal with that that maybe aren't really serving me. And so there's sort of this unpacking process there, which goes back again to this idea on the individual level that I talked about of developing pragmatism. That's just looking at being willing to say, okay, actually, I want to just work with this. I want to engage this part of my life because maybe I have to or I need to. It's a big part of our modern day society is the money aspect of our lives. And then you kind of add in this sense of humor and developing this notion of feeling personal worthiness, and you've really got something to work with there. So the starting place there is a little bit looking at our fear.
Why are
people so charged about money? Is it because we're afraid of not having it? I mean, I remember it used to be this sort of women would fear being homeless, or we all have these like secret fears of running out of money or not having enough money if something goes wrong. Where do all these fears come from? And then you talk about engaging your clients with their hearts, minds, and guts. So not just their minds, like I guess a lot of finance people do, but these are very sensitive topics and triggers for so many other things that we deal with in life. And I'm just curious how you go about that. And
big time. So the reason that I think this is so charged, to use your good word there, around this stuff is this stuff goes really deep. I mean, we're talking about the sort of primal functions that we try to maintain in our lives of like food, shelter, safety level of experience. So it's real scary when you don't feel like those things are secure or you feel like they could be destabilized. And it goes straight back into the sort of amygdala, to use a neuroscience term, but this kind of ancient part of our brain, that's the fight or flight kind of reality kicks in. And when this stuff comes to a fore, it's like you go back to like primitive mind and you just want to either fight your way out of it or flight. It's like you shut off your thinking functions a lot of times, or your ability to sort of stay with it, because you're just, it's so intense. So this is deep stuff. So that's one of the reasons people don't really want to go there and talk, or that it's a really charged area. And the other is that in my experience and in my readings, there's a lot of truth to the fact that we define ourselves in relation to others in particular. And money is the measuring stick that is used oftentimes in society today. I personally think that's a very unhealthy thing. It's a sickness in a sense of our society, but it's the facts of the times we find ourselves in that that's one of the big ways in which we locate ourselves in relation to other people. And it's one of the big ways we feel less than, or try to fake it, you could say, in a sense, or we've all had those kind of experiences of wishing we could seem more together financially and more resourced financially than maybe we are, or vice versa, if we're really well resourced, trying to hide that. So this money piece as a measuring stick interrelationally, and the fact that we define ourselves in relation to others, makes it a really intense existential kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it taps into our confidence and are we good enough? And you can see many things kind of rolling out of defining yourself based on money as a measure. Do you ever touch that with your clients, or do you try to stay focused? Because that seems like it's almost more like a therapy session, or maybe to help people feel more comfortable with who they are, not who they are in relation to how much money they make or have inherited or whatever the situation may be. How do you help people to sort of feel comfortable and whole about their personal situation, or do you?
Yeah, I don't do that with all clients because everybody's different and people have different needs. And some of it's purely like, hey, I want to make an investment portfolio that I can be proud of. And that's sort of,
that's where you go.
That's the starting place. Or I want to make some financial decisions and I don't have a guidepost of like, because I don't talk to my friends about this stuff or anybody else because it's secret and I'm afraid to talk about it or whatever. It's off limits. So I'll help people at that level. But the client relationships that I really love, we do have these kinds of conversations. And there's a sort of a path quality to the whole thing in terms of their own relations there and my own learning too. You know, I learned so much from my clients and their experiences and looking at this part of their life as a potential place for their well-being to be improved. Mm-hmm. Talked about at the beginning is super rewarding. And I do have some client relationships where I don't even manage their money. They just hire me to be like a money coach for them or something like that, even though I don't like that term. So it's more like, I just think of it as being a friend. We have to pay to talk to you about this money stuff because it happens to be a really useful use of your time and resources. So I love these conversations with people and we do have them.
I think I read one of your blogs where you talked about a technique that you use called, I'm not sure if this is the name or this is the process, but breathe, feel, speak, where you have somebody ground into what they're feeling and then understand what's going on in their head and maybe share thoughts that might be bottled up. Is this one of the processes that you use, or can you talk a little bit about some of the processes that you use to help us share some of these feelings and thoughts that could be bottled up, causing other trouble?
So yeah, we've kind of established like the view of why you might do this. And then it's, you know, what you're asking really great question is like, how do you do this? And there's a lot of ways, and there's nothing that's a snap of the fingers and it's done. No surprise there to you or to any of your listeners, probably, who know the amount of work that goes into being able to hold downward dog or being able to relate to your mind in any way. It's an ongoing process. So I do encourage clients who are interested and are willing to do a little bit of meditation at the start of the meeting we have, and also to incorporate that into their lives in general. And the reason for that is that the purpose of meditation is to develop the ability to have an awareness of your own mind that is non-judgmental and is clear. And that's a really good starting place for having money conversations. And it's a good place to be familiar with, so you can touch back into that when the money conversation goes off track or starts to make you feel a different way than either bad or good. I tell my clients, what I want you to do as we go through our meeting is when something makes you excited, just call time out and tell me that that's making you excited. Or when something makes you feel worried, or it's where we're hitting on a concern area, or your stomach gets tight, or you just feel sick, or whatever it is, call time out and tell me that too. Doesn't mean anything good or bad about whatever is causing that. It just means it's information for us that really tells us a lot about like how to solve the problems or the questions that you have in this part of your life so that we can get to real answers that are going to help you over the long term. So starting with that, a kind of basis, the breathe, feel, speak technique is one that I introduce to clients and I ask them to use. It isn't so much necessarily in our meetings because I try to create a space that's infused with, we're going to keep coming back to the moment and just checking in on how you're doing. And I kind of can guide them there, but it's more for like when you're in your other parts of your life, like having a conversation with a boyfriend or girlfriend or spouse or a parent or a child or something like that, where all of a sudden and you notice like your face is getting hot or you're getting scared, you can come back to this notion of breathe, which is, as you said, the grounding, kind of like touching into that meditation type experience of awareness of your feelings. You allow yourself to have that awareness that brings the feelings to the forefront where you can just realize, oh, okay, I'm feeling hot or my stomach hurts or whatever. And then the feel is noticing those experiences, not on an intellectual level of what you think, but what's just what's happening. And then the speak is actually developing the bravery to bring that into the present moment with whoever you're there with, or maybe just with yourself in an acknowledgement level. And that's really empowering. So that's the empowerment point, is when you start to do that, you start to realize that the whole thing's workable.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
We're going to take a little break to give a shout out to our sponsor, Chosen Foods. We love this company because they make super healthy, mindful, nourishing foods. I'm personally in love with their 100% pure avocado oil and their pure oil sprays for cooking. Their sprays have just one ingredient, avocado oil. So good for you, and you can use it for anything. Head to chosenfoods.com/untangle and use promo code UNTANGLE50 during checkout to get your 50% discount off of your entire order. What a great company. Now, back to our show. We've been talking lately about relationships a lot. Do you even get into this when couples have different sensibilities about money, and how do we resolve those types of conflicts?
Yeah, that's a big part of it when you're working with either families that have intergenerational people who are making decisions and trying to make them together, or obviously people who are in a relationship, whether that be married or starting to share finances or whatever point in their life they're at. A lot of times also, it's really interesting. Many of our clients are younger female inheritors, and that's a whole different can of worms that we won't necessarily go into here. But a piece of there is, and I have more experience on that side than when it's the other way around, but it's like an imbalance in money and how to start bringing the other person into that world of fear and potential that comes with having a lot of money and wanting to have a relationship with the person you're with and bring them into that, even if they're not from the same background. In terms of that piece of it, one of the big things that you do end up doing is providing a unbiased intermediary situation to the relationship, which I can do as someone sitting there with them. But you also look to train, like through these kind of mindfulness sorts of techniques, where you kind of defuse any of the habitual patterns that may be there between them, or just point out the technique of just talking about feelings rather than trying to think your way through the whole thing. Then oftentimes people can understand where each other are coming from, and then you make decisions that are more likely to be followed by both or agreed to by both, as opposed to one person either overrunning the other or kind of dominating that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to that point, what are some of the biggest challenges you see with couples and money?
We touched on one, which is an imbalance of money.
Right.
It's a very interesting area to work with and has a lot of facets. So that's one that you see and how to work with that. The other is a difference in risk tolerance and risk aversion. So you'll see couples, and typically speaking at the risk of generalization, women will tend to be oftentimes more practical and frankly better investors in the overall sense because of their sense of the notion of risk. And men will tend to be more risk takers and maybe a little bit less practical in a sense. Those themes can come up in any relationship of one person who's thinks they want to take and are willing to take more risk, another person who's more risk averse, and balancing those out. And that's where you try to bring in the professional expertise you can bring to the situation around money, which is to say, okay, what are the factors that help you make that decision? Like, what is your age? If you're young, you have a long time, you can't afford to be more risky, and you can someone see that. Or if you're older and you're retiring and you think you need to be really safe, but you realize, oh, well, I'm 65. I could very well live 30 more years. Well, that's actually a long term. Maybe I'm being too conservative for how long my money might last. So that's where you start to bring in the sort of, I would say, traditional practical investment advising. But that context always has to be infused with this notion of what, again, when I say something that excites you, let me know. When I don't, or when I say something, or we talk about something that makes you worry, tell me, because that's the decision-making process that people have to go through. And I think that's the difference with mindful finance, is bringing that feeling into it. Because if people feel good about this, a lot of this stuff is very emotional. Ultimately, it's not intellectual.
Yeah, right.
They follow it and they'll make decisions that they're happy with and that serve them well.
Yeah. I even have some friends who have been married for many years and have different sensibilities about money, and had decided over the years to just keep separate checking accounts and separate investments and separate credit cards. And do you find that this works for couples sometimes, just to completely, like, say we want to be together, but we have different financial sensibilities? How does that work?
Yes. The short answer is anything can work. It's really about the people involved. So completely separate finances can work. Completely together finances, where only one person really pays attention to them, can also work. So there's no technique that is perfect. The thing that has to be looked at, I don't think it's good if there's no communication between the couple at all about it, about why they're doing it. So it's really not so much how you do it, it's why you do it. As long as you understand why you're doing what you're doing, separate accounts, together accounts, some separate, some together, whatever it is, as long as you understand why you're doing it, then it's fine. Then that requires the people to have communication with each other.
Yeah, that's such a thoughtful approach. And it, of course, makes a lot of sense, right? Because you can't change someone completely. You can only try to understand them and then come up with a plan. And again, it doesn't have to be like anyone else's plan. You're saying you can create or help people create unique plans for themselves or for their families based on what their particular needs are.
Yeah. Again, coming back to this whole idea of mindful finance, which is this notion that this part of your life can be a source of personal well-being and self-discovery.
Yes.
That's why I love this area so much, is because this stuff is like so deep, as we talked about, off limits, as we've talked about, and charge, as we talked about. There's no like better place to learn about yourself and in your loved one, if it's in a relationship or something like that, than in this area. And if you can do that in this cradle, you could say, of non-judgmentalism and warmth and cheerfulness. For a sense of humor, I try to bring in, make everything we do fun. Like I talk about safe experimentation with how to make changes to these things, which is the idea that you may want to make a change, but it might be too much to just say, oh, I'm just going to stop drinking lattes and save instead. That's not going to work. But you might say something else like, I'm not going to drink a latte on Tuesday, and I'm going to take the $4 in cash and I'm going to stick it in a box in my room. And when there's $100, I'm going to take my boyfriend out to dinner. And then it's kind of fun. Again, it's this idea that if you have all those techniques and you have some expertise, actually you discover stuff about yourself and a relationship, it's like you could even just hopefully become more in love with each other as you know that much more about the other person.
And then you also write, I think in one of your blogs, that cultivating compassion is one of the keys to success. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, the fundamental notion here is that around this area of money, a lot of times like we don't want to touch on it because it gets to this core of like who we are. And when we look at ourselves, we are our own harshest critics. And so at the kind of base level, like level one, I guess you could say, you need to develop this compassion for yourself. I call it developing a sense of worthiness because it's sort of in the terminology of finance as well. That's a long process and it's fraught and it's kind of a very personal journey. But the notion that like there's actually nothing wrong with you around money, and a lot of times people have a lot of storylines about themselves, about the way in which they're deficient in money, like they're even embarrassed to not ask, well, how does a mortgage exactly work, or these kinds of things that they think they should know. But the truth is you shouldn't know that, and nobody should. It's not like something you're born and it's sort of an obvious thing. It's like a completely made up tool. And it's fine to not know what that is, even when you're 40 and you've had a mortgage for 10 years already. So developing that bravery. So that's the compassion sort of key piece there is, if you don't have compassion towards yourself, you'll never develop the bravery to be vulnerable in this area, which is the path to like making really good financial decisions and becoming financially knowledgeable, which doesn't take that long, by the way. So just touching with your feelings and asking questions that maybe seem stupid or cause you to be vulnerable, pretty soon you're going to know much more about money and finance than any of your peers.
Yeah. So if you had to come up with the top five tips for getting in touch with your money self, what would you say?
That's great. I don't have like a rote pat version that I wish you told me ahead of time. Probably more clever than I'm going to come up with out of my head. I have a lot of like life hacks.
Yeah, let's have a money hack here.
If you're saying like top five, I'd say the first is to develop an awareness practice like meditation or something like that, and get into it and start to let that kind of mind or feeling aspect that you have there infuse your money situation somehow. Just come up with a way to do that.
Yep.
Meditation, I think, is the best because it's very sort of accessible. It's free, doesn't take very much time as you do it each day, and it develops this non-judgmental mind where you can just see what's happening without telling yourself it's bad for you or it's good for you or you're a bad person or that's a good thought or that's a bad thought. You kind of cut all that and you develop this non-judgmentalism. That is a huge advantage in your money life, being able to apply that kind of a mind. So that's one. The other one that I would say is talk about money more. Find a way. Don't talk about things that are going to be too much or too intense for you to talk about. It's not some sort of like self-immolation challenge. Just talk about it a little bit more. You know, if you're out to dinner and you notice like it's time to pay for the check and your habit is to always offer to pay the whole thing, even though you kind of resent it afterwards, just don't offer to her. Just wait a little longer and say like, it's so funny. Like whenever this happens, like my reaction is I want to just pay for the whole thing, but I realize it's kind of just my thing. And the other people around you are going to, it's going to be a great conversation and they're not going to be like, think less of you for saying that or something like that. So talk about money more. The other is feel rather than think more when you're dealing with your money. So when you're dealing with money issues or avoiding money issues or things like that, first just pay attention to what you're feeling and then use that as your guide for somehow what you need to engage with your intellect. Another one would be do your money stuff in unusual situation or unusual places like nature, basically. So you basically get out in nature. So that's one of the things that I find is great is client meeting. If we don't have to cover paperwork stuff or things like that, is just take a walk and do a walking meeting instead. Or if you're going to talk about it with your spouse, don't like sit down at the dinner table and make it into some kind of like, oh, you know, this is great. Oh no, it's time for the family meeting about money. Take a walk out in nature, take a hike and talk about it. And you can still have an agenda for it and things you want to speak about, but just do it in that setting.
One more. All right, one more. By the way.
Okay, good. Another one I'll come back to because it's a really big part of my practice and how I help people kind of start to move the energy of their sort of money life and money story is safe experimentation. If you want to change something about anything in your life with regard to your relationship with money, just do safe experiments, which kind of plays into these other ones I'm talking about. It's like, it's safe to, instead of talking about it at the dinner table, to experiment talking about it in nature. It's safe to talk about money. Find a safe way to talk about money. Like I said, don't talk about it in a way that's too exposing or too intense for you, but just find a safe way to talk about it a little bit more. Maybe with your girlfriends or your boyfriend or whatever, and just say, tell them something funny that happened about money. So safe experimentation. So you find this, you notice habitual patterns that you have or things you want to change about your money life. Find a safe and ideally fun way to test making a change in that way instead of telling yourself you're bad and you have to stop doing that and trying to stop at cold turkey or something like that. That's not good and not true.
These are awesome. I love them. It's great. Is there anything else that you think we should know about mindful finance or being more mindful about money before we close? Anything you'd like to add?
I think it would just be more of a reiteration of the notion that this area of your life shouldn't be off limits from your personal path that you're on and your desire to lead a fulfilled, meaningful life. And in fact, I think it has to be part of that path for yourself as a person, as a human. Otherwise, if you leave something out, that doesn't work. It has to be all encompassing. So that's really the key here. And the notion that that doesn't have to be painful, or maybe it is, it can be, I don't want to avoid that at all, but it doesn't have to be something that's just a terrible part of your life. It's actually can be this sort of self-discovery is fun.
Well, I love that you talk about it as a part of being a source of well-being and that it is part of self-awareness and self-discovery, because
yes,
that's what it's all about, right?
And so it's just
one more path to that. So
and thank then we'll you. All have less suffering, which is
yay.
Good.
Well, yeah, that's what we're going for.
That's what we're going for. Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Saul. It's so great to have you on the show. I'm really excited to be talking about mindful finance and money and some of these maybe taboo topics that I think are so important. So I'm really grateful that you were able to be with us today. Thank you.
Yeah, that's another one, actually, expressing gratitude. So I always end everything in that way, or I try to, and I tell people to try to do that as well, and aspiration and gratitude. So yeah, I feel a lot of gratitude to you as well for all you're doing with your podcast and everything in your business life, and also for taking the time and having me on.
Thanks so much to Saul for joining us on Untangle. For more information on his work, check out HighlanderWealth.com. If you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And if you have a minute, can you give us a review or rating for our podcast? It helps a lot. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio in the App Store. We'll see you next week.